And so if you're a...
Is that your backyard?
If you're born in January, it's 1978, you're on a 1978 team, and it's 1980. Well, you're only 10 years old.
Good morning, everyone.
You're a whole lot older than somebody born in October.
I'd like to call the August 18th Pension Committee meeting to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the May 23rd, 2016 minutes. They were distributed prior to the meeting. Is there any questions or concerns about those minutes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. We do have a lengthy agenda today. My goal is to complete everything in 2 hours and still be done by 12 o'clock. So I'm going to keep everything moving. We're going to move some things a little bit out of order so that some of the people that are here, they can leave if they wish. Just want to let you know, I think I've covered everything that we talked about last meeting. Everything is in this blue packet. You requested a copy of what the professional services costs were. That's what the spreadsheet is to the left for your review. That's what that is. You have a copy of your agenda, and everything on the right-hand side you'll be referring to as we go through the agenda. So what we're going to do is go to... we're going to skip over item 2 and move to item 3 first, and that's the State of Delaware Pension presentation. And we have the State of Delaware Pension, David Craig, here, and he's going to lead the discussion.
Morning.
Morning.
My name's Dave Craig. I'm the pension administrator for the state, so I was asked to come down and talk about our performance over the last year a little bit. So as you all are already aware, it's not the best news. So I have a handout for you. The first thing, our return as of June 30th was a negative 1.3. And if you look at the first page of the handout, the box in the left-hand corner, you can see our returns for the quarter, calendar year, FY16, and then some extended periods of time. So we lagged our benchmark, which was a positive 1.2%. So our investment committee very concerned about our performance in the past year, and I'll tell you a little bit about what didn't go well and what did work out for us. Well, the good thing is July, we were at positive 1.9% for just the month of July, so things are hopefully rebounding. But what didn't go well for us, we underperformed in some energy-related investments. In particular, there was two investments. One was our master limited partnerships exposure, MLPs. The second was an energy exposure that we had in our private equity program. For those two, the investments committee still has a very high conviction on our MLP exposure, and they've actually returned 14.7% for the calendar year of 2016. So they have rebounded back like we thought. The energy exposure in our private equity program, we're very limited on what we can do in our private program. For example, we can't get out of it fairly easily without taking a loss. So we're looking at that. Some other things, we had three value managers that underperform. We were underweight bonds, and we have a pretty high cash account, about 3% in cash right now. We like to keep enough cash to pay 1 year of pension benefits. So basically, our cash is getting zero, so that kind of draws down our performance. Some things that have worked out for us, again, our MLPs have rebounded, so we didn't trim down any of our exposure to the MLPs. We still maintain underweight in the international equity. We still maintain our exposure to large cap equity. We have been trimming down our small cap exposure, and we have increased our bond exposure here the last couple months. So if you turn to the second page.
Excuse me, do you have another copy of that?
Do you have an extra?
You give
it. Here, thanks,
Dave. So on the second page is our tax comparison to other pension funds, and these are funds that are over $5 billion. And the red line is our 5-year mark. So it's rolling 5 years, so you can see the dip there on the right-hand side where we have dipped. So we're at 82%. So the higher the number is, the worse. So we don't, that means 82% of the funds perform better than us on a rolling five-year basis. The blue line is the 10-year. So our 10-year, we're still in the top 10%. So that's still good. Our 10-year numbers are good, and we're long-term investors just like you are. So we're still pretty satisfied with our 10-year number. If you go back to the first page, it gives you some numbers past 10 years to 15 and 20 years. So you can still see we're still pretty good at 15. 20 years, we're at 7.8%. So this has been a pretty bad year for us compared to our benchmark, but we still, on the long term, doing fairly well. The last page just shows our asset allocation as of June 30th. And probably what stands out about us is the, in the left-hand top corner, there are alternative investments. Included in that is hedge funds. We have about a 2% exposure to hedge funds, which is probably small compared to other states, and we have been trimming that back. So you can see our cash sitting at 3%, and our international numbers, you know, we've been trimming them back just because the uncertainty going on over in Europe. So with that, I'll just take any questions you have.
Does anybody on the committee have any questions?
On the alt side, are you planning on keeping that allocation pretty consistent with the 2022?
Yeah, that's probably toward our top end of our range. The way we're risk investors, so we assign a risk category to all of our investments. So to have an alternative investment, that's our highest risk, so we'd have to make some changes on the lower end. So that's probably at our top of our range right now, the 20%.
I didn't know if you had any questions.
I did.
You might.
Well, actually, two questions I had. One was, one of the things I saw with the state of Pennsylvania back in 2008, when the market really corrected, they had, because of their exposure to alts, now their allocation was higher than Delaware's, but because they were illiquid, they didn't have the ability to rebalance their portfolio, so they ended up having to take money from the domestic equity managers to rebalance right at the time, it was like early 2009, right at the time when that asset class rebounded. You know, is there a potential with the amount of relatively illiquid or opposite? Liquid assets. Could you run into that same situation?
No, it's something we look at. In 2008, we had actually knew something was going on, and we had increased our cash to probably 3 years of pension benefits. So that would cover any drawdowns that we would have for private equity and so forth. So when we had to make contributions to private equity, we had cash to do that. We still have 12 months of cash, so we factor in any drawdowns. So it really paid off for us in 2008, even though we had a very high cash, that we had drawdowns. We didn't have to sell in a down market to get cash. So we're still in good shape with the 12 months of cash that we have.
The other question I had is, I'll say at least our modeling, as well as others we've seen elsewhere, feels there's a bit of a premium on domestic equities right now, looking at historic PE ratios, and international, there is not that premium. So is your decision to be lighter relative to your target on international, which I believe is 20%, is that your target?
Yes.
Is it more of a tactical decision right now, or is it a long-term, more strategic decision?
No, I would say it's probably a tactical decision that we've just done in the last 6 months.
And that underweighting by about 10%, is that going to domestic equities, or is that going to other asset classes?
Probably more to domestic equities.
Gina, just one question about long-term expected returns. The total fund you pointed out earned 7.8% on average over a 20-year period. And, 3, 5, 10, 15 are all in the mid-sixes. If you, what are your bogeys out there or your long-term return expectations as you look forward from here?
Well, I see that's your next topic with your actuary. Our expected return, we dropped last year and maybe even the year before to 7.2%. We look at this every year, even though this should be your long-term, your 30 to 40-year rate. But because of the GASB changes, we're looking at this every year. We're at 7.2. Our board feels that's probably on the high end just because of what's going on with interest rates and so forth. But we did not adjust it this year. We stayed at 7.2%. Yeah, what's interesting, in the 15-year number as of September 30th of last year, we were the number one performance. So you look at it, and it was 6 point something. And, okay, your 15-year return, we're number one, but we're underperforming against our expected return. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're all in kind of the same boat with that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? All right,
thank you.
Thanks for coming back.
Sure.
So that's a good segue to go into the next item on our agenda. We're going to go into the effects of lowering the interest rate of return. And we have Janet Crana here. She's going to talk about, Chiron has done a study for us and looking at what those effects would be if we were to lower it.
All right, so the discount rate is probably the most important assumption in the valuation because it affects both your retiree and your active liabilities. So it's impacting all the participants. If we end up lowering the rate, that's going to increase the contributions because there's really three sources of funding for the plan. You've got your investment return, you've got your employer contributions, and you got the employee contributions for those that need to make contributions. So, you know, your employee contributions are defined by your plan. So if you end up lowering the expected investment return, then that's going to cause an increase in the employer contribution. Over time, though, your actual contributions will be based on your actual investment returns. So to the extent the assets do well one year, you know, it could lower the contributions, you know, the following year and vice versa. So when we select the discount rate, we look at a number of things. We look at what's happening with other plans that are similar to yours. We also look at your historical experience. And then we also want to look to see what we expect we can return in the future. We also need to be concerned about your tolerance for risk. You know, are you okay with the volatility? Do you need to contain the volatility? So what your preferences are also impacts what the selection of the investment return would be. NASRA does a survey periodically, and they survey large public sector plans. Their latest survey is from February 2016. That survey included 127 large public sector plans, and it shows what the interest rate has been over time. If you look at the light-colored gray at the bottom, that shows the plans that are within the 7 to 7.5% range. And you can see over time that has actually been increasing. So whereas historically we had a lot of plans that were, you know, up around 8, 8.5%, that's all come down now. And then what you can also see is if you look at the bottom right with the red is, you can see now more plans are even having interest rate return assumptions of below 7%. So there has been a trend over time for plans lowering the investment rate return. As of this past survey, the average return assumption was 7.62%. But you know, I think plans are still bringing that number down. This was really back, the most recent data is as of 15. These are some of the discount rates that are currently being used by other plans in Delaware. So the state plans and municipal plans are at 7.2%, City of Dover was at 7%, and Wilmington was at 7.5%. I know that some of these, I know that Wilmington is currently doing an experience study and they will be reviewing the investment return assumption. So there is some discussion about potentially lowering it, but again, I don't know where that's going to end up, but they are reviewing that assumption. Okay, so what we've done now is we've actually took a look at lowering your discount rate assumption, and Brett's going to walk you through those.
Yep. So this is probably the numbers you guys are most interested in, seeing how much this is actually going to cost. So the chart that we're looking at here, in the first column, we're looking at the baseline assumption. This is your current discount rate, 7.5%. If you scroll down to the bottom row there, the contribution right now is an estimated $3,229,000. And this is the same number we presented in the May meeting. So that's kind of our baseline. This is what we're using to compare against everything else. The other thing to point out with this chart is there were also proposed plan changes that we did in May. These do not include the plan changes. This is just the discount rate. So that's important to keep in mind. The plan changes would possibly be an additional cost to what we're showing here on the board. So if we look at the second and third column, second column looks at the 7.25%, third column looks at 7%, and then if you scroll down to the last line on the chart, this is the number that you'd be most looking to, is what's the increase in the contribution. So based on just changing the interest rate, the expected contribution for 2017 would increase by $385,000 at 7.25%. And $785,000 at 7%. So these are kind of the numbers you want to look at as far as, is this something you guys could budget for, or if you want to take some risk off the table. So this is kind of where you get once we plug it into our evaluation. So this is just the pension side of it. We also did the OPEB, which Margaret is going to. It's the same type. So the OPEB, similar chart here. It's got the 7.5% in the first column, 7.25% and 7%. And then the last line item there is your increase in contributions. And from OPEB, you're looking at about $148,000 on 7.25% and $301,000 at 7%. So essentially, it's going to double. The change is doubling for going a quarter of a percent each direction. So with that kind of concludes our presentation on the discount rate. And
if we need to see projections, that same projection that we did back in May.
Yes.
So we could just take a quick look on the pension side if we were to do projections based on these different discount rates. So if we were to assume this is the 7% discount rate, so if we dropped it all the way to 7%, you could see you're still going to get to you start out with a slightly lower funded ratio. So if I compare your assets to liabilities, it's a little bit lower than where we are now. We'd be starting at 79%. But because you have that closed amortization period, you're still going to get to 100% over time. However, your contributions are going to be slightly higher initially because of that lower discount rate.
Yeah. Here you want to put 7.5 just to show it.
The 7.5 on which we're currently at. So you started out at 18.7% contribution. They're in the 18s, and they slowly go down over time. Right. Let's see. All right. There we go. That's the 7%. Okay. So whereas we're in the 14% now, it would go up to about 17%, 18%, if I dropped it to the 7%. If we were to go to the 7.25%, you're looking at contribution rates starting at about 16.8% and then slowly going down over time. So by dropping the discount rate, the contributions will go up initially, but you are, over the long term though, you're mitigating the risk. So you won't see as much volatility if assets do, underperform going forward.
And the first chart didn't really change there because, as we mentioned, whatever change in the discount rate is just going to be made up in the contributions.
Now, one of the things that we do, what we need to be, to look at it is where do you think your expected returns are going to be? I mean, Michael will probably have more to say about that, but it's really where you know what your best guess is, you know, given your asset allocation and expected returns, what you think the portfolio is going to earn over time. Did you want to do anything with the H-scan?
H-scan's showing similar projections. It's basically changing from 7.5% to 7% funded. We're still going to kind of hit it. If we just kept that 7.5% funded over a 20-year period, we'd be at 87% funded. If we changed it to 7%, we'd be just slightly under 85% funded. So it's not.
Okay.
In OPEB?
Yeah, the OPEB is, it's basically going to kind of stay about the same as the pension side.
Mr. Schoen, can you talk to us? We talked a little bit about the last meeting, what you feel that a reasonable projection would be, knowing our asset allocation, knowing that right now we're 60% with the state, they're using 7.2%, and we're thinking about going to 65%.
Sure.
What your thoughts are on that?
Yeah, so I would say if you had a 65% equity target, in our opinion, you should be no higher than 7.25%. Okay, we've seen our clients, some of the, those who are 60% equities have moved to 65, which you're contemplating, those who are 65 moved to 70. But we also expect over the next 10 years to have significantly lower nominal returns than historic because of lower inflation expectations, lower yields on fixed income, and lower returns on domestic equities. So again, it's even at 65% equity, you know, our view is no greater than 7.25, you know. So, and you tend to be, even within your decision-making of how you allocate among your managers, you tend to lean to the more conservative side on a more conservative asset allocation mix. So I think you need to be more conservative on your return assumptions.
I agree. I mean, I have to admit, as trying to put the budget together, lowering it to 7% and coming up with another million, it's going to be 1.1 million with the changes we're making, is going to be very difficult. But with that said, we have to make those decisions. If we want to have a pension that is has these benefits, that we need to be realistic in our percentages. Would you be comfortable with 7.25, or would you think that it'd be better if we do the 7%?
I would say 7.25 at least at this point in time would be fine. What we're seeing is, because you as well as everybody else, there's the issue of the budget, and sometimes it takes a little while to glide your way to where you need to get to. So you could take a step to 7.25 and then reevaluate that in a year or two and see if that's, you know, if it's fine. But in my opinion, I think 7.25 would be a very nice start and maybe an ending place. Mm-hmm. You know.
And I know we'll have another experience study done. We had one done 2 years. It'll be in 3 years when we have another one. And there's still some assumptions, the inflation and the COLA assumption, I still think is a little bit higher than what we really do. So at that point, I would like to see us, if we could drop the 7 at that point when we bring that down, it would help. But these are my initial thoughts. I'd like to hear your thoughts as well.
And if I could add one thing, and that's what I'm seeing others do also, is look and say, if their salary increase assumptions, if their underlying inflation assumptions are high, you know, part of what's bringing down this nominal return expectation is because of lower inflation expectations. And if there's lower inflation, then you're going to have lower salary increases, lower COLAs. So you could, you know, the liability side may not grow at the same rate also. So, mm-hmm. And sometimes that makes it easier to bridge that gap by dealing with both at the same time.
Okay. So you think that's
still
two on the high side?
No, I don't know. I was thinking actually a lot that I see out there are three, and I think that's
right,
high.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're down around 2.5%.
The COLA assumption's 1% for pensioners.
Well, I think 1.4%.
1.4. 1.4.
And that's been, if you look at historically what you've been paying out in COLAs, that pretty much tracks what you've been doing historically.
Yeah. Not recent.
Right.
I see it's a little bit lower if you average it out over 10, 15 years.
Right.
Definitely something we need to look at. And I feel like we need to look at those in order to drop it to the 7. But I also want to hear what the board has to think, what their opinion is on the 7.25 and 7% as well.
If the states lowered their expectation to 7.2, I don't see how we can possibly not lower our expectation for return as well. I mean, they have to sort of go hand in hand if we're relying on them and continue to rely on them going forward. Like the Fed just gradually increasing interest rates, I mean, I think the smaller increments would be more prudent if you're looking at the budget, like you said. Mm-hmm. So 7.25, I'm kind of on board with as well. If you guys think you can fit it into the budget.
I would agree with that. I think that's a good next spot to be. As I look at the pros and the cons of that, but one of the things that enables us to do is still be conservative in our thinking in terms of our investment array. And if we weren't moving, then I think we'd probably be saying, how can we wring more return? Which obviously we'd be saying, can we take more risk prudently that'll enable us to gain more return? And I think of the evils that we face, that is the larger evil. So that is a long-winded way of saying that this move downward is probably sensible, in my view.
If I may add, and the 7.25 I mentioned was predicated on being at 65% equity targets. Now, I know the state's at 60, but I think most, tell me if I'm incorrect, but most of the time you tend to be over that 60% allocation. Is that fair? If you include all the private equity.
If you include private equity, yes.
Yeah, and that is more private equity than hedge funds. So.
Okay. I would like to make a recommendation to County Council from this meeting on lowering it. If that's the consensus of the board, does anybody want to make a motion to lower the rate of return assumption to 7.25%?
I'll make that motion to lower the interest rate to.
Okay, I have a motion to lower to 7.25%. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. We'll take a vote. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Rawl?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you. That goes
for
very
both
good.
Funds?
That will be for both funds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Janet, and your team. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to turn the meeting over to Mr. Schoen. We're going to go back up to item one for the, or item two, the investment analysis for the quarter.
That closes. Yeah. Okay.
So, you could use this.
Okay. So I told Gina that I put 8 quarters into the machine. So she said, well, next time just put 4 or 5, okay? I said, look, I don't charge you by the word. we have quite a few things to cover. So we'll, you've gotten the reports ahead of time. Let me just touch on tab one, which is the market environment. As everybody have a report, I do have an extra report if somebody doesn't have one. Sure. Okay. There you go. So let's just go really sort of to the headline news of what happened second quarter and what's been happening so far this quarter. You know, if you go to just that tab one of market environment and see on page one on the upper right hand side, focus on that gold line under the real GDP growth, that's inflation adjusted. And what you see is it stayed positive and has continued to be positive for quite a few years, but you see a downward trend rate. And that's not quarter by quarter, that's an annualized trend rate. So it's we believe more indicative of the trend of what's going on out, you know, on a longer term basis. What does that mean? Well, a couple things. One is that the Fed, who had originally said they were going to do four increases, then said maybe 2 increases this year and maybe 1 and maybe none. Okay. So we see that going on. You'll see that manifested that interest rates actually have gone down so far this year and bond returns have been positive, capital appreciation, fixed income. We also see the pressure from overseas. A number of countries have gone to negative interest rates. This is a charge to take your money. Okay? And that puts some limit on our ability to raise our interest rates, because if we raised our interest rates, then there'd be more flow of capital into the U.S. It would appreciate the dollar. If the dollar appreciates, that might sound attractive. In one sense it is, because it helps keep our inflation down, but it also makes our cost of goods more expensive. So that's not good for our manufacturers and for our exporting. So it's a sort of this fine line that we're trying to, the Fed is trying and wanting to start increasing interest rates, but there's too many pressures out there that really prohibit them from doing that. Okay. You also see on the bottom graph there, you see the personal savings rate. That tends to be fairly volatile, but it has a downward trend also. And since, you know, if savings rate is slowing up, that at some point in time, people will have less money to consume, and personal consumption is still the biggest driver of our economy. You know, now, what are some of the other headline news? Oil prices continue to stay low. I mean, one day you hear them jumping up, the next year you hear them dropping down, but you just go, and you can still tank up for, depending upon where you go, but sometimes $1.80, sometimes $1.90. Up around me, it's $2.20, but that's a whole other issue. but those are very, very low. You know, it's indicative that oil prices have slowed. It's had some impact on the financial markets also. And then the other thing you saw going on this past quarter at the very end was Brexit, you know, the vote by the UK to leave the European Union. And initially, for a couple of days, the stock markets, all the worldwide stock markets went down precipitously, the U.S. a little bit less than the others, and that's very typical in times of uncertainty. The U.S. tends to do better. The negative returns in the U.S. tend to be less negative than overseas. It's not always the case. So what was all the smart money thinking? Stay out of equities. Of course. So what's happened for the last 6 weeks? The stock market's gone great. It's why you have a disciplined policy to rebalance your portfolio. When money is needed, you don't try to guess, is the stock market going to go up or go down? And you've been you'll see you're very disciplined in your asset allocation mix, and that has served you well. Okay. Don't ask me to prognosticate next year or next quarter. But it gets back to you try not to prognosticate. If you do see some long-term fundamental trends, like you see in lower expected returns, then you have to make adjustments, which says you really need to put more money in, because the pension bucket is only filled with two sources. It's either investment returns or contributions. So investment returns are going to be lower, then you have to increase your contributions. You've been very good about not only making your full contributions each year, but many years putting excess, you know, contributions in, and whenever you're in a position to do that. So, okay, if you go on to page, let me just go back for a second. One more thing about financial markets, then we'll go to your specific portfolio. Go to page three for a moment, if you would. You can see U.S. equities, and that's the gold bar, the silver bar, we're up 2.6% for the quarter. It's a positive, obviously. That's about historic norms. Historically, stock market, U.S. stock market, does about 10%. So you take 2.6, multiply times 4, you get about 10. On an inflation-adjusted basis, that's actually a little bit better, because historically, inflation is 3%. It's been running less than that. International stocks were negative. That was a lot of it happened in that last week with the Brexit issues. You'll see that this quarter so far, international stocks have I think they've actually, depends which day you look at, have done a little bit better than U.S. stocks. And emerging market equities, which were the dog last year, have been the darling so far this year, somewhat bouncing off the bottom, up 6.4 through the end of the half-year mark. Fixed income is really the real surprise out there, that U.S. bonds for the half-year, and that is the aggregate index. Think of that as an intermediate bond index. Intermediate maturity includes U.S. Treasuries, U.S. agencies, mortgage, and asset backs. It does not include junk bonds. It's all investment-grade bonds, up 5.3%. Why is that? Because interest rates have come down. Okay, that's the driver there. And spread, you know. And high-yield bonds, very strong for this first half year. This quarter so far, they're actually some of the things that did well the first half are turning the other way, such as public REITs also. We've seen that at least last couple of weeks. And then commodities and U.S. REITs for the half year
which were the, and TIPS, which were the inflation-sensitive investments, which did terribly last year, are the ones that are the winners this year so far. Now, you do not have an explicit allocation to commodities. You do not have an explicit allocation. I mean, you don't have a commodities fund. You don't have U.S. public REITs. You don't have TIPS. But indirectly, you do have some of these through some of your bond managers, especially the state. You'll have some investment in TIPS. There's Treasury inflation protected securities. You'll have commodities indirectly, like ownership in oil companies, you know, and then REITs through the state. They have real estate, but they have private real estate. They don't have the public real estate. So you have not the same type of exposure, but some exposure to the real estate market, which we think is positive. And on page four, the big thing to take out of that is that value stocks have been the big winner so far this year. Growth stocks were the big winner last year. Value stocks were the big winner before that. Growth the year before, it's almost year by year. Again, you don't try to guess which way to be. You're fairly neutral in your approach, and you don't try to deviate from that. You know, and mid-cap has been the big winner so far, especially mid-cap value, and you have a little extra, you'll see when you see the OPEB fund, a little extra exposure to the mid-cap and to the value side. Okay, that's not a tactical decision, it's a strategic allocation to that space. Okay, any questions about the markets and the economy? So you go to the next tab. Some observations: the market value of the pension was $73 million as of the end of June. In the back of our reports, you do see some one-page updates. As of the end of July, it was up actually the $75.6 million, so about $2.5 million gain in July alone. July was very good in the stock market. Your gain was $1.3 million. The 1 year, you had a loss 1 year from July 1st to June 30th of $266,000. And you slightly lagged your policy index, and that should say Q2, not Q1. Apologize for that. That was DuPont and State of Delaware. You know, State of Delaware, as they've mentioned, they've struggled the last year. You know, he spoke as to why. Long term, their numbers have been good, but short, you know, last past year, they've been, you know, low in their peer group. You know, they also, and I'll show you in a minute, they are quite a bit more expensive than your other managers. We'd expect that to some degree, but as you have more and more alternatives in your portfolio, that's going to drive the price up. So the cost of what you have with the state is about 68 basis points. Overall, you're about 52. Our average client is about 37, 38. So your overall fee structure is about 25 basis points higher than you know, about 15, 16 basis points higher than our average client. It's driven by the state. Now, that doesn't mean the state's done a bad job. I think overall, over time, they've done a very good job. But you need to be mindful of their cost structure, especially in a lower, you know, return environment. Looking ahead, you know, we're going to talk about asset allocation, some rebalancing, and then instituting a funding policy, which I think the actuaries and the auditors like to see a written funding policy. And, you know, is that a, yes? Okay, so just a couple other things, and you know, feel free to, you know, I'm mindful of time, but I'd say, you know, on page 14, you know, everybody, oh, two things I should mention. Up until last quarter, when we reported returns for your investment managers and for your total fund, we did gross rates of returns, okay, before the investment management fees. And the reason why we did that is because for universe comparisons, the universes out there only did gross returns. Like the Tux universe that he referenced, which is put together by Wilshire, they only do, and in fact, I talked to Wilshire 2 weeks ago about this. They only do a gross rate of return universe. Investor Force, who we use, they have both a gross and a net. We hadn't been using the net only because we want to make sure it was statistically significant number of observations. We've come to the conclusion that it is. So for this quarter, we're showing both gross and net. And going forward, if it's okay with you, we'll just show net because that really shows you what it is after the fees. We're going to do it both at the total fund level and for each individual manager. Okay. This quarter, we want to transition you through that, and we're showing gross and net. That's why I see just a whole lot of pages there. Okay.
You'll see on page 14, you know, just because everybody still wants to say, okay, so how did we do versus our peer group? It's a little different peer group. We compare you to public funds, just like the state is using the Tux public fund universe, but where they're using the $5 billion and over, we use the all sizes. So, you know, from the small to the medium to the large, and you would fall into the, so I'll call it the small medium range. You're not small, small, but you're not, you know. Longer term, and our since inception numbers for net start as of 1/1/12. That's when we start. We've been doing net returns for you since the beginning of 2012. We just haven't been reporting them, okay? But we had that data, and over that time period, you still rank above average. You're in the 40th percentile, the top 40%. 3 years, the top 39%. But for this year, year to date and quarter, you're a little bit below average. As I mentioned before, it's driven because of the state's performance this year. But as I've mentioned before, other years the state significantly outperformed. So, yeah, I wouldn't over evaluate them just on this 1 year. Okay. What else? I just turn you to page 19. Actually 20, because we have net returns there. If you look at DuPont Capital for the quarter, net of their expenses, they were up 1.1, but their benchmark was up 2.5. The year to date, they're lagging also, and the 1 year. Since inception and in their 5 year return, they're basically right on their benchmark. They've sort of matched the S&P 500. Okay. So we'd like to see a manager outperform their benchmark, but they've not underperformed, net of fees, so. Yeah.
Is there an asset allocation chart for them like we had for the state, or is it just all large value, or?
It's all large core.
It's all large core.
Yes, yeah. So, and that's further on in the back, yeah. It's all large core, okay. My friends, they've done an okay job. Hasn't been a great job, hasn't been a bad job. Been no less than, no more than the S&P 500. I don't see, my opinion, I don't see a compelling reason to move away from them, but I don't see anything overexciting about it either. So, but, no.
35 basis points, they should be doing a little bit better on large core than an index.
Yeah.
I think.
Having said that, the indexing has been very tough to beat over the last 5 years. So there are periods of times where I'd like to see them outperform is when the market goes down. Okay, so if a manager sort of ties their benchmark, but they outperform in a down market, they might underperform in an up market, then it's giving you a little bit more defense. It doesn't show up in a number per se, but you know. So, but yes, ultimately, yes, if they can't outperform or give you something else like more defense in the down market, then just index it. But those numbers are net. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay. You see you have that specific allocation to mid-cap value. So at least for the past 6 months, we've been right. By having an over allocation to that space, it's not significant amount. It's only 3.5% of your portfolio. But as you, and you've heard me say this many times, but over time, mid cap and value have been the winners. And that's not just, you know, it's 5, 10, 20, 30 years, you know. So we like having a little exposure there. Wilmington Trust, you know, doing what they're supposed to do. Now you look at that and say, well, they're sort of matching their benchmark, but they're also doing cash flow management for you. They're laddering that portfolio to give you the liquidity. So if they just match their benchmark on an after-tax, you know, on after-fee basis, and they're giving you this extra, you know, so that you don't have to dip into other pools when you need liquidity, to me that's, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. And then lastly, you know, the state, you know, again, they've struggled, you know, this past year, longer term, you know, their numbers have been, you know, above their benchmark. Yeah. If you go back into the back again, just so since you have the end of July, you know, for the month, you did 2.2%. The state did 1.8. So even though, you know, I said they have done better, they done better relative to how they had been doing. Overall, you're the other part of your portfolio really was up more like 2.6, 2.7, you know, so. And DuPont basically matched your benchmark for the month, and just a one-month snapshot. So, any questions about performance? Okay. Should I go on to OPEB performance or do the other things for the pension and then come back to OPEB?
Let's finish up with the analysis. Go to OPEB.
Okay. So go to tab 3. Okay. Market value just about $32 million, and as of the end of July, you're at 32.7. That's one of the back pages also. Gain roughly $500,000. 1 year gain for this one was positive. You lagged your policy index again. Apologies, that's just a Q2. And that was primarily caused by Thornburg. I will talk about Thornburg in a minute when we get to this. I'm going to make a recommendation that you move out of them. Okay. But you've outperformed your policy index over the past year. It's very strong returns by the MFS Low Vol Global Equity, and then outweighed the poor performance by Thornburg Global. And when we wrote this up, we put monitor Thornburg Global Opportunities. We meet every Monday. Our investment committee meets every Monday, 9:30, and we talk about different managers, and you know, especially for you know the ones where we do consulting plus. But you get some. Some of your stuff gets an extra look because of that. And we came to the conclusion for some of our clients at the end of June that we were going to terminate them, the ones who were in the C portfolios. And just this week, the rest of our clients were making that move to move them out, which we're going to do over the next week. If you want to do that, then where to? Thornburg, we still think is a good firm, but we don't have the same conviction that we had before. They've done fabulously for you since you had them up until this last year. They, you know, as I spoke about before, they had a big changeover in their portfolio managers, not on this product, but on their flagship product. That always raises the concern, you know, do they take players, you know, from their, what was it? Actually $1 billion, now it's $2 billion in this global equity, and put it with their $20 billion, you know, flagship, the Value International Fund. Performance was okay the last half of last year, and then it went down some with Thornburg, and it came back, and we finally said, you know, if we're talking about this, like, about every week, it's about time to make a move. So we are moving it. We've moved it, them out of our 401k. So, we feel we need to tell you all those things that with still something of these uncertainties, we just think we don't have the same conviction with them before. It's somebody, we're not all terribly negative on them, but their performance has been lousy for the last year. And it's one thing to be a little bit lousy, it's another thing to be a lot lousy. It's been a lot lousy. And with this, all these other things going on, I'd much rather see it go somewhere else. And then if they write the ship and we watch them, and you know, they've been a long-term good firm, then maybe you come back and look at them. But so that would be our suggestion, is that you do something with Thornburg. And we're going to do that with all of our other clients, you know, over the course of the next week. So
you have the recommendation here for what to do with the Thornburg?
Not fully, because we only came to that conclusion what to do with the rest of our clients Tuesday. So, but there are two options. One is just split it among your existing manager. The other is take it, put it in index funds, and then take some time and look and see what to do with it. So it'd be very easy to sell it, put you know, the domestic equity piece into the U.S. equity, you know, index fund, and then take the international piece, put it into the Vanguard International Equity Index, and then take some time to sift through that process. So, or the alternative is split up among those that you have now. But I probably lean to the former rather than the latter.
As a side note, I completely agree with that, because I've moved my personal clients out of Thornburg's flagship over the last 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement with you on that.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, let's make a motion if you're willing to move move it out of Thornburg and reallocate among our existing managers. Do I have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Wait, can I stop? Okay. So among your existing managers means you would not put it into the international piece, into the international equity index. You just reallocate what you have now. We would work with you as exactly how that.
Exactly.
This, and then you can go back and look at it.
Exactly.
That. Sure. Okay.
Okay. So when could you go through that one more time for me before?
Okay. So I'd say one option is take and reallocate it. You know, they have, just say about 5.5 to 6% of the portfolio. So we would, you know, put some with MFS, some with American Funds International Growth and Income, and then the rest of it would go into the Vanguard Institutional Index Fund. So among your existing funds that you have now. Okay.
Okay.
The alternative would be move, and I'll just for ease round it up to 6% you have. You'd go get it, you'd put 3% in the institutional index, it's a S&P 500, and then you get another index fund, which would be an international index, and put that 3% of international into the index, into that. So you'd have to have, you'd have another fund in that case that you'd have to.
And yeah. We'd say Vanguard's international index would be the one that you would use?
That or Fidelity. Yes, we could. Yeah, I'd say Vanguard. Yes, that would be easy because that's who you're using right now. So I'd say you could go either one of those two approaches. I think what Gina had put up on the floor was to split among the existing funds, not getting the international index fund, get allocating the international piece to
American funds
and MFS.
Well, my thought is I like the idea that we place these international funds into an international index rather than split among a bunch of other existing investments, personally.
That's what I thought I was making a motion for, so I would prefer to have it in an index as well.
I agree. I think it's better in the index.
So your recommendation is that we take this, say, 6% of the portfolio and split it in half of it to MFS and the institutional index, and the other half to a new Vanguard International.
Yeah. No, I would say, I think there's two paths you could go. One would be is that you get a Vanguard Institutional Index, you get the International Index Fund. You would take just assuming that Thornburg's at 6 to make it easy. Half of that amount would go into the International Index Fund, and half would go into the Vanguard Institutional Index Fund, which is the S&P 500. That's one route. The other route would be to split it, and actually it would work out just about 2% would go to MFS, 2% would go to American Funds, and 2% would go to that S&P 500 fund. And that would give you the same sort of 3-3 split.
And that would keep our relative allocations between domestic and international about the same.
Yes. So I would say it was not a recommendation, it was laying out two different options.
Well, I like the idea of keeping our allocations the same.
Yeah. And either one of those would do that, either of those approaches.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to craft a motion, if anybody wants, I'm working on to word it correctly.
Before we make the motion, are most people in favor of the index or the existing funds? I prefer an index to keep the cost down while we make it more final decision. That would be my preference.
I would agree with that.
So then I would like to make the motion that we terminate the Thornburg and reallocate 50-50 between the Vanguard Institutional Index and then the Vanguard International Index.
Right.
I'll second that.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Take a vote. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Roth?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. All right, back to you, Mr.
Schoen. Okay. Let me, turn you back to page 29 just for a moment. So, RSAO, everybody should cheer the successes when they can, because that doesn't always work out that way. But if you look at page 29, and this is the group, actually, do I have that? Let me take you to page 28, actually, because that's the net universes. As you know, longer term, you go about 4 or 5 years, the performance of this fund had not been as good, If you look at, now this is just, relatively short time, but for the year, you were up 1.8 versus the benchmark of 1.3, and that's net, and that ranked you in the 35th percentile, so above average, and actually at the three-year mark, you're above average also. Not much above average, but you're above average, which is much better than where you had been years ago. So I think the steps you've made and your cost structure is at 25 basis points. And actually, will come down some more, too. So that gives you, I'll say, a relative advantage to the average. The average fund out there is, I'll say, 40 to 45 basis points. Our client average is about 35 to 37, and you're even less than that. So, and again, same way I said before, low return environment. I mean, costs are always important. It's even more important in a low return environment. So. Okay. Next, I guess, investment policy statement.
Yes.
Okay. And I think, starting with the pension, I think there's really two issues to tackle. One is whether you want to change your equity target from 60% to 65. That's one issue. And the other issue is currently your target within the total of that is 60% with the state, and then the rest of it we piece around to get to your overall asset allocation mix. Or do you want to have 50% with the state and do your allocations around that? I would add, I think if you would decide to move some money from the state, I'm not positive, it's like a six, the window, you couldn't implement it till the end of the year. I think I'm correct. Does that sound right?
It does.
Yeah.
Sounds
okay.
But there's no limit on the amount that can be moved from the state. They don't say you can't move more than X amount per year out, anything like that either.
I don't think, because they have, it's an $8 billion fund and you're, yeah.
In your folder behind the Chiron paperwork, there are the two addendums to the investment policy statement that Mr. Schoen has put together.
I'll take credit, but it was Brian.
Okay. Pierce Parker.
I'll take credit if you like them. If you don't, it was Brian. The first one is where you don't change the allocation to the state, okay, where it says in the back page you'll see the target 60%, and then to get to all the other pieces you need it, it's 29. And this is assuming that you don't change your target that you've had for international has been 12%, and since the state targets for 20% and they're 60% of the total, 60% of 20% is 12%. So I will tell you, most of our other clients have higher allocations to international. You guys have been more right than most of our other clients because international has lagged domestic. So the second one is if you move the state from 60 down to 50, which would necessitate, to get to the 12% target in international, you'll see on the back it says of equities, it says 36 domestic, 34 in international too. So you would to get to that overall 12, because now the state would only have 50%, and 50% of 20% would be 10%.
And could you review briefly the driving rationale that reduces the state from 60 to 50? What's driving our consideration of that?
Yeah, I think it really more came out of conversation, I think, the last couple of meetings of, you know, are you, you know, do you prefer to have a 60-40 split, or are you more comfortable with a 50-50? I mean, I don't know. That's sort of a vague answer, but it's, you know, I don't think you want to be driven by just the fact that they've underperformed this past year. I think you want to look at longer term. But are you comfortable with, you know, the fee structure they have and the types of investments they have and the liquidity they have? And I do think it's a good piece to have as part of your overall portfolio. But it's I'd say it's not a radical change. It's not like you're going to 100 or going down to 25. But, you know, so it's more in response to what I thought was some of the discussion last meeting. So.
And so the fee structure for the state of Delaware pool is 0.6 something or other, right?
No, almost 0.7, 0.68, yeah.
So alternatives that we could consider would be much less costly.
Yes.
He said even for conservative funds are more around the 40 basis points versus the 60.
Yeah, I would say the national average for a plan of your size is maybe around 45-ish or something like that. Something 40 to 45. And I'd say our average client's
37?
Yeah, about 37, yeah. And we have some as low as 25, you know. So the more indexing you do, the less alternative you have, the lower it is. The lower, more fixed income you have, the lower it is. So there's factors that go into that. But.
Are you comfortable with the state's alternative allocation of 22%? That's about 13 point something percent of our overall portfolio, which seems a little high to me.
In that it's private equity and not hedge fund, I'm a little bit more comfortable with that. I'd say they're big enough. Generally, none of my other clients have hedge fund or private equity exposure. However, it's an $8 billion fund. You have a lot more oversight to monitor those things. Private equity is one of those things. If it hits, it hits well, and if it doesn't, you know, they have. Then that's one of the reasons why I asked that question about liquidity, because what happened in 2009 at the state of Pennsylvania was not only did they have to rebalance, but the private equity firm said, we're making a call now. And so you were they were locked into deals that even if they were bad deals, they had to keep putting money into, you know. And what do? They end up taking money from the domestic equity managers, and that's the area that did wonderfully. And they took it right at the, you know, they had to. They needed to find liquidity someplace. So that's where they took it from there. So, you know, I'm not a big alts fan, but I could see in this situation I'm okay with some there because you get the overall package you get. But how's that? Did I hedge that answer well enough?
Can you confirm what I was expecting?
Hedging that answer, or sort of giving an answer, but muddying it up a little bit.
That was good.
Okay. I think you can all read what I said.
Does anybody have a preference? From my perspective, I always like to go with lower cost. It's 10%, but you know, when they're not performing like we would hope, and then with the cost added, I'm leaning towards moving the 10% out and going with that. Addendum.
Yeah, I would formulate that into a motion that we adopt the addendum that calls for a 50% target at the Delaware State Pool with details as shown.
Okay. So I have a motion to decrease the Delaware State Pool target from 60% to 50%, and then we are going to move to 65% equities, which is increase the equity targets from 24% to 36%, and decreasing fixed income target from 16% to 14%. And it's our intent to maintain the overall targeted allocation of 65% equities and 35% fixed income. Good. Do I have a second to that motion? Okay. I have a motion and a second, and we'll take a vote. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Roth?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes, and motion carried.
In the back, there's an implementation page, well, implementation book. If you go to the next to last page, so what you'd look at is the far right-hand side. And one of the questions you'll want to think about is, of that extra, that money that's coming from the state, okay, some of it will go into fixed income, some will go into equities, some will go into international, okay. Of that new money coming in, that goes to domestic equities, do you want to give it to DuPont, or do you want to open up an S&P index fund, which you don't have now, and put that into there?
Spirit of low cost, I'm all for the index fund.
DuPont hasn't been going up well anyway.
Right.
So I wonder why we want to invest more money into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're doing okay.
They're doing okay.
They're doing okay, yeah. Right.
What were their basis points?
35 basis points in fees. Net returns, I mean, so they outperform, just a little bit less than covering that fee differential. So net over the last 5 years, they're about 10 bips below the benchmark.
Would it make any difference if that was, the 500 was split up between, say, for example, the Russell 1000 growth and the value? I mean, would it make any difference overall?
Basically, no. Yeah.
I don't know that it's enough to make a big difference, but all things being equal, I also like lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
If DuPont's performance was better, I agree they're not bad, but they were better, then that might change my view. But other than that, I vote for low cost.
Yeah. And this overall, relative to where we are now, it'll save you about 6 bips. You'll be down to about 44 basis points, more like the historic, the national average, and on $70 million, that's $42,000 a year. So, yeah, for all these changes, cumulatively all the changes.
And you're recommending the Vanguard Total International Stock Market Index, where the 2%.
Yes.
International.
Yeah.
I'd make a motion that we adopt the implementation plan shown on page 2 of the portfolio options document in front of us with the option to choose the S&P 500 index fund rather than DuPont for those equities.
For the new equity. Yeah.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table to use the implementation plan, which is the last column on page 2. Do I have a second? Okay, I have a second. Ms. Roth? Take a vote. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Roth?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you.
Okay. We'll work with Gina then on that. It'll be a stage, first it's getting it up to 65, and then the state money, won't come over till January, so we'll just work with you on, it'll be a staged implementation.
Yes, and I have to take this to council too to get approved.
Yeah, on top there.
Months.
Okay.
We'll get it done in December.
Okay.
But we'll work to it, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. And then I think I just have one last thing.
funding policies. You'll also find copies of the funding policies on the right of your folder.
Should I just touch on why funding policies? Okay. And they may even be able to. I have to look over my shoulder because they could probably answer this one better than I can. But basically, under GASB, said, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, when they set a long-term rate of return assumption, that the contributions are going to be made each year. Okay, and especially for the plans that are significantly underfunded, which yours is not. And so with a written funding policy, it states, you know, we will make the required contribution each year. Now it's not called an ARC anymore, it's an AEC, actuarially determined contribution. Well, it's actually ADEC, right? Now
actually
determined. Yeah. Okay. I've heard it ADEC too, actually, determine employer contribution, but okay. In either case, the auditors like to see that there's a document that says you're going to do this. The actuaries like to see this, and it just spells out that, you know, the funding objectives, and that basically you're going to contribute the minimum determined contribution each year as a minimum.
So. Yeah. And I don't know if you had time to look at it. It is basically putting in writing what we do. So this is nothing unusual, but it is nice to have it in writing. Gives us the objectives, gives us the guidelines that we would continue to look at our assumed rate of returns and doing studies at least every 5 years. We talk about that we would do the minimum contribution rate as determined by the ADC. And this just puts it in writing for us to adopt, and then I'll take this to County Council for them to adopt too.
Does it define what the ADC is? Because all that means is that it's got to be based on reasonable assumptions. So does it define, like on pension, that it's the normal cost plus the amortization and the amortization policy and then the admin expense?
We did not put that level of granularity into this.
Only because if you just say ADC, it's not defined in terms of, you know, normal cost plus amort. So I don't know if you want to put that in there so that it spells out what you mean by ADC.
Because the ARC was clearly defined in GASB, but ADC is not clearly defined. It's basically your determined contribution.
Yeah, all it means is that it's determined by an actuarial process, but it doesn't define how you determine it. So I thought maybe you want to be a little bit more specific and put in that it's going to be the sum of your normal contributions plus your amortization and spell out what your amortization is, as well as on the pension side, like it'll be for OPEB too, what your administrative expense is.
We could go back and work with you guys. I'd be fine.
Take a quick look at it before it's finalized, perhaps.
Yeah. Here, there's one of each. And then we can. It doesn't have to be done this meeting. We can come back to it in November, you know. So.
Okay.
Yeah, just take a quick look at it, just to make sure that we're doing it the way, we're all insane.
Well, we don't give that level of granularity in there, so what I would ask, just take that. We can even send you, just mark it up and say, here, we'd like to see this.
Yeah.
We'll look it over and deal with
and
it next
it.
Meeting.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay.
Mr. Leahy?
Just a question or a concern. Certainly, I don't have any dispute that a funding policy might be helpful. Might it place the county in a inflexible position? If there's a budget year, for instance, where you overfunded based on these formulas, naturally the funding policy is not going to have any difficulty with that. But if there should be a year where for some reason you decided that you needed to underfund it, would this policy mandate that it be funded regardless?
I think it would be what the ordinance says. Because I know there's a little section in there about funding, but I'm not sure how specific it is, whether it's defined.
Right, it's not specific. This would, obviously, we would be against the policy that was adopted by council, but GASB, they're recommending that this be done because they don't want governments to have that leeway, because you made a promise and that kind of commitment, and if you're going to make that commitment, you should be funding your pension. Mm-hmm. And I understand it puts us in a little bit, but we need to, I feel that if this is what we want to do and this is the pension we want to have, we need to be committed. And I feel it's prudent to do that.
Good.
Yeah, okay. Certainly I do too. I just, mm-hmm. you know, you're removing perhaps a level of flexibility, perceived flexibility, that you've never exercised.
Right.
And you'd want council to be aware.
Yes.
That this is not something they can tamper with.
Correct. So what we'll do is we will work with the actuaries, put a little more information in the ABC part, mm-hmm. and then bring it back at the next quarterly meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Sounds good. I think that might be it for you, Mr. Shone. You did well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The last item is just for informational purposes. The proposed ordinance changes to the pension calculation. Last meeting, we discussed the effects of changing for 12-hour employees, that their pension would be based off of 42 hours versus the 40 hours to get to their annual salary. That was going to cost about $101,000 a year added to our contribution. And also increasing the years of service, allowing people to stay an extra 5 years, which is cost neutral, because if you are working longer, you're pulling on your pension a lot less. So that's why that happens to be cost neutral. So I took that to council. Council is in agreement that it should be done. This is, you know, really what they work, and that's what they should be paid. And being cost neutral and having, especially some of our 12-hour employees start at such a young age, for them to have the ability to work longer and earn that pension. They still have that option to retire at 25 years. This just gives them 5 more years to actually earn the calculation onto their pension. So in your folder is the very last item in there, is a copy of what the amendments would look like to the ordinance. What will happen next, now that I know that council also supports this, is it has to go to the personnel board, where there is a public hearing at that board there. Our intent is to have the public hearing on October 13th. We're working with the members of the board to see if that date would work for them. And then we have a process, and then it goes to council for their adoption. But I wanted you to also have a copy of what the changes look like. It is exactly as we discussed at the last pension meeting. This is how the wording would change. So.
Can I just
know,
sure. When we did the cost analysis, it's only an additional 5 years for dispatchers and paramedics. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case, or?
It'll be, they asked for it to be all employees.
Okay.
To add 5 years to everybody's option. Yep.
Something down in Derry, and it was roughly the same.
Yeah.
So it's going to depend. It was about 40.
I think it was about 40,000.
And the reason why there's a slight cost to it is because we already assumed that people would retire
later,
all the way up till 70, whereas that was not the case for paramedics and dispatchers, because right now the assumption was that they would go out at the earliest possible time. So we had to modify that assumption a little bit. So you don't get exactly a cost neutral if you're giving it to everybody. Now, not everybody will be affected, because some wouldn't have hit the third, you know, an extra 5 years until past 70.
Correct.
Anyway. So there's a slight cost to it. We just did some down and dirty house. It was roughly $40,000, perhaps, an increase.
Okay. All right. Is there any questions on that? There'll be a process coming to get to that point. Okay.
I'd like to have another clarification. We're in the middle of doing this evaluation now.
Mm-hmm.
Should we or should we not take these possible plan changes into account for this?
So this would be as of January 1st, and I don't know, because
of 17.
You're of 17. Yes. So I don't know, since your report's as of a certain date,
yeah,
if you have to.
Yeah, it was as of June 31, 2016. And because this wouldn't even be done until October, and I think you had wanted the pension results and OPEB results by the end of September, I
correct.
Think you said.
Correct, for
so
the audit.
So then I think we would reflect that the following year.
Yes.
You okay with that, Margaret?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, sounds good. Okay, is there any other additional business or questions? Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, we'll take a vote. Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Raw?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson? I vote yes. Thank you.